acting.
Thank you.
And you look like you're on vacation.
I was. Okay. I was. Last week I was in Cancun.
Cancun, yeah.
She's smiling. No.
Right?
She never smiles very much.
I know.
Weird.
She never smiles her budget time, and this year...
Okay, we have a lot to do today. I called the November 4th, 2019 Committee of the Whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Member Bourne, she's not here right now. Huh? Member Covey.
Here.
Member Ludden.
Here.
Member Underdunk.
Here.
Chair Brooks.
Here.
Okay.
I'm going to invite those in attendance to share their thoughts, as you know, in a 3-minute time frame. Would anybody here share their thoughts? I feel like The Exorcist. You know?
So you could also ask for comments after Fun 65 if you want.
Oh.
My name is Peter Van Rechten. I live at 1023 Meadow, so I'm a resident here. I'm here to speak glowingly about the kiln that I believe is on your agenda.
It is.
I'm here as a ceramicist this evening, a student, not in some of the other hats that you might know me from. I wish we were talking about that other thing today, but we're not. I've been in the program for a couple of years, and it's been a wonderful experience, and I believe it really goes right to the heart of the mission of this organization of enriching our lives in the community, and it's very meaningful to me. Especially because at face value, a lot of the programming here is for a lot of children, you know. And so as a program that appeals to both kids and adults, to me it's very valuable, personally. The request for a gas kiln, I understand, could be fairly expensive, but there's a lot of things in life that are expensive. And what I think... What I would suggest is the lens to look at this is how much enrichment does it provide this program rather than what the pure cost is. I believe it will allow the program to not only catch up with the other ones in the area, in the North Shore, both Highland Park and Evanston, I understand, have gas kilns. I looked into them, possibly maybe taking a class there and then coming back and forth. The gas kilns offer something artistically that the electric ones do not. There's a difference. And so for me, running out of 3 minutes, for me, having that artistic challenge is very, very valuable to me personally. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you tonight. And the other thing is thanks a lot for volunteering to do what you're doing as board members.
Thank you.
Thank you for saying that. That's very nice.
And I might even, I have a feeling I know what you're going to speak on, but maybe after we have the discussion of 165, because that would kind of bookmark or bookend this discussion.
So oh, you want me to wait?
Yeah, I think it might make more sense to people because they don't know what we're doing. Okay.
Hi. Okay, that's Andy.
Okay.
If you can't figure out, Miss Natalie.
Okay. So, do you think they should speak now so they can leave?
Do you guys want to listen to our discussion? Do you want to speak now? It's totally up to you.
Well, the only reason is that the other commissioners probably don't know this is going to be part of this.
Well, if they've read their packet.
So I read the packet.
I just don't know what they're interested in because I read the whole thing. There are seven or eight things on there.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I don't know if there's new trucks or if
it's
new trucks.
Sort of a first thing.
I guarantee it's not the trucks.
Okay, so we'll do the comments
on that.
Okay. I'm Peggy Kimball. I live at 241 Wentworth in Glencoe. I have been very happy to be in the ceramics program for about 6 years with our incredible teacher, Natalie. And I'm also happy to congratulate you guys on winning the gold medal. Fantastic. And as we've talked about, it's important for a community that's a gold medal winner to have a ceramic studio that's at least at parity with the studios in other communities. So you'll see Highland Park, Lake Forest, Highland Park Arts Center, not just the Park District, the Evanston Arts Center, they all have gas kilns. A gas kiln, while it may appear to be costly, is a basic part of a ceramic studio. It's not like we're asking for the moon. This is something that every studio should have. If you have questions about what a gas kiln does that an electric kiln doesn't do, here's Natalie to answer your questions. But it's a really important thing to have in a ceramic studio. And our studio benefits from attracting people from Glencoe as well as other communities. And I know that other people will come to the Glencoe Park District Ceramic Studio if we have a glass kiln, who have not already signed up to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like to speak as well?
I'd rather answer questions if you guys have it.
Okay.
I think I looked over the memo that Bobby sent, and I think it's really thorough.
Okay.
I've been working on trying to get us a gas kiln for several years, so I'm more curious as to like what questions you guys have right now.
Terrific. So we'll
move
come back
on to discussion of Fund 65 capital projects.
All right. So Fund 65, we actually moved up this discussion 2 months compared to previous years. So there may be still some questions about what funding is available and stuff like that, but we wanted to bring it to earlier and get any questions out of the way and talk about the different things that we're requesting for this. So this year we just did something different. We did a 5-year condition assessment similar to what we did in Fund 69. The Fund 65, our asset manager, just to show you all the things that we look at every year that has to be replaced. I usually say that Fund 65 is not always the most exciting things we have to do, but it's infrastructure replacement. In order to keep our programs, you know, our mission is to have exceptional programs and facilities. That's what these things fund, is to make sure that the programs that we're offering and the facilities we're offering and the support system are well funded. So what happens is after we do this condition assessment, we look over the condition assessment, we talk as a team and say, okay, can something be pushed back? Sometimes we'll have vehicles on there and maybe they can last one more year, and we'll say, can they last one more year? Because we need really, really want this instead. And then if they can, we push them back. If it's really getting to the point where we can't push them back anymore or to fix them will cost more money in the long run, we'll advance that project. So we have quite a healthy debate within our team about what finally makes this list. And there's things that we really want on there, but we know there's only a certain amount of money, so we talk about that and then we advance this list forward. So this year, I'm sure you all read it, I'm just going to go over this really quick and you can ask me any questions. Things that we kind of looked at both recreation stuff and then parks, things that support the recreation program. So for our recreation items, right now our sailing program is really kids get on one of our big sailing boats or, you know, and take a ride, and we really want to evolve our sailing program into something that they learn to sail. And so these sailing prams will do that. Any questions on that one for Bobby?
Are these Opties or something else?
They're kind of a recreation version of the Opti. It's easy to maintain, very simple to rig. All of the community programs throughout the United States kind of start kids in these prams, and then they graduate them to the Opti. It's basically the same boat except it's self-bailing, doesn't have airbags, and it's really easy. You get the kids capsize, and multiple kids can fit in them, and they're cheap.
How long do they usually last?
Probably 10 to 15 years easily.
That's
yeah, they're right. Very durable. They're made of a rotomold plastic, so they've actually lasted a lot longer than the old fiberglass used to. Mm-hmm.
So that will help expand our program and build it and make it more desirable for people to come to the program. And as you know, that's been very successful over the last 2 years, expanding that program area.
So, question?
Yes.
So this would not replace the other ones. It would be in addition to.
Correct.
That is correct.
Expand the program.
So what our current fleet that's used for rentals, it's used for adult classes, used for family sail, it's used for sailing camps, used for aquatics camp. And really, we're not teaching the kids to sail. We're really giving them rides, so they're going to lose interest in ours after a couple of years. So the goal is to get them to the point where they can actually learn to sail by themselves, steer the boat, be out there without an instructor. Although that sounds scary, but that's what the goal is, and most other community programs around Chicago and around the United States do.
Okay. Next one is the top gym floor. This was originally budgeted for this year. We like to roll it over because with the timing of the ELC playground construction, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had that indoor space available. We didn't want to have that out of commission while the playground was out of commission. And we also had difficulty finding the right kind of flooring, and so I believe we found it. Chris, do you have any updates on that one?
Initially we were looking at like a foam product, but it turned out that it wasn't going to be something that we could keep clean for the expected lifespan of the product. So, and I will speak to this a little bit. I know Jessica visited a number of other park district facilities, Naperville, and kind of scoped out what they were using in the exact same area, and we settled on a product that would function for our space, but also be looking good in 7 or 8 to 10 to 15 years.
They've had it for 4 years, and when she inspected it, she said you would think it was installed yesterday. So they were very happy with the product.
And the material's a lot more gentle on the ELC, the smaller children. Right now, if you go in our flooring, a lot of rug burns happen because it's a harsher surface. This surface is a lot nicer. So that's why I'm glad we waited and found the right material. So.
You're asking, where's the top?
That's a good question.
So you go in there, each house, of course, the west entrance, and you go through the two double doors, the key fob door, and straight ahead, once you walk through those doors, it's right there, right in front of you.
Okay. Can somebody just show it to me this evening, what happened?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Bobby can do that. The next one is Todd Jim Gross Motor. Again, this is a carryover. We wanted to do it all at the same time. So that's the equipment we put in the Todd Jim. So
these really aren't funds that these are funds that we have not touched. The 17 and the 13 are funds you've not touched this year. You want to roll over?
Correct.
We upped the budget for the flooring, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's enough budget for that equipment? And the reason I'm asking that is that, as you know, Highland Park uses their indoor gym for a lot of parties. I'm just wondering if this could be another amenity that we use. One of my friends talked about renting it this winter, and I was like, I never really thought of that as an option as a birthday party. So I'm just, you know, just throwing it out there.
We can look into it. We used to offer what's called open gym.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever turned up. We offered it in the winter. No, it just didn't seem to be very popular. This would add a significant amount of equipment to it. This would actually make it into a true top gym. Right now, if you go in there, it's pretty lame, to be brutally honest. It's really in need of a makeover. And it's used by a lot more kids now, too.
There's, you know, that indoor climbing equipment that's really popular now.
The challenge with that room is it traditionally, in the last 2 years, has been infants through two. So it's no longer kind of the threes and fours what it is. I've been to the one in Highland Park with my kids. It is kind of cool, but you can do on a Saturday in the middle of the winter. So this will be probably geared towards the infants through 2/3, and probably not so much the threes and fours and fives.
The older kids tend to go to the gym more, right?
Yeah.
So we need indoor space for the younger ones.
So maybe an option.
We can absolutely look at it for sure, especially when we start. I know Jess has got some ideas of stuff she wants to go in, and I can mention it to her.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. The next one is the gas kiln from the ceramic studios. We put an extensive memo, very nicely done, Bobby and Natalie and Liz back there. Have you read the memo? Do you have any questions for Natalie or Bobby or Liz?
I do. Is a gas kiln effectively a replacement for an electric kiln?
No, so we would want both. Each piece of ceramics goes through two firings. The first one is typically always in an electric kiln, and then the glaze firing is what's different. So this would provide a different glaze option for our students. It would actually reduce the wear and tear on our electric kilns, because then maybe half the work would be fired in the gas kiln for the glaze firing.
Gets up to a much hotter temperature.
I understand it can do things the electric one can't. I was just wondering if down the road it gave us the opportunity to not replace the electric kiln someday.
No.
You would still
idea, though.
No.
You know, still need that. Know more about kilns than ever before.
Are there efficiencies with electric use, not electric use, but just general carbon footprint? Is the, you know, in houses, gas tends to be a little bit more, like gas heat, a little more efficient.
So the kiln that we actually selected after looking at a bunch of them, they advertise theirs as being the most fuel efficient gas kiln. So I don't know, like, if you, are you talking like in terms of like, are we going to see a huge spike in our gas bill?
No,
or environmental?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out, is there an operational expense associated with it?
I don't believe so. I can call the company and find out what they think each firing would cost. My understanding from when I've looked into it in the past is like maybe $20 a firing or something. But if you're replacing...
What's an electric kiln for firing?
Probably 15.
So it's in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's about the same.
I was hoping you would say it was a lot less and you can justify that. So, but no, it's good to know. It's in the ballpark and...
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
I just want to make a note that right now, according to our figures, the gas kiln didn't make it into the top priorities based on the money spent. So worst case scenario, staff is recommending that we would transfer fund balance reserves from the recreation fund, which would eventually reduce the transfer to Fund 69 to pay for this. But we are so early in the game right now, because we're doing this so much earlier, it may all wash out once we get some exact figures. There's some unknowns in this budget, for example, the retaining wall. We're looking to the village to see if they will pay a portion of that. We put in the full amount for worst case scenario, as we don't know how that'll flush out. There's some other things that may go down in price as we bid them out. So I just wanted to put out there worst case. Mm-hmm. But we're still, the staff is still recommending that as a good use of that fund balance.
Lisa, you
go ahead.
You actually are reminding me of, I thought this was a very helpful memo, but the question that I did have was, okay, I get that, you know, it's 160,000 for rec and mm-hmm. 460,000 for parks, etc. But how does that fit in with like what we have already budgeted or would normally budget?
Well, typically we have a $500,000 transfer from corporate fund to Fund 65 to fund these operational expenditures. Mm-hmm. Typically there are some projects that are not done, such as the floor. We always like to keep a little bit of a cushion for carryover for things that do come up to be able to pay for it without taking that fund balance all the way down. And so I do know there is some carryover money. What that is exactly right now, I want to say it was around 150 coming over from
last year.
Well, would be coming over from this year into next year.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be used, but again, we'd want some cushion. Mm-hmm. Still, but it's totally separate from that. $500,000 is totally separate from the Fund 69 transfers.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying normally we'd budget around $500,000 for
yes.
this. That's
yeah.
why the 88 that we're talking about for the kiln is above that.
Correct.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
so they add up to actually about $150,000 more than
correct.
That.
Correct.
Correct. Mm-hmm. But there is some carryover that will from this current year that will help pay for that.
I see.
You got at least 33,000 in carryover, or at least 30,000, right, from the mm-hmm. 2017 or 2013
yeah.
mm-hmm. carryover.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you my thoughts as my kids have gone through your program.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Everyone loves our program. What I'm trying to figure out is I'm trying to get a better business case here for you, because at the end of the day, funds either go here or they go towards something else, and
right.
it's just trying to understand the case. Do you believe this is a, and I can ask all of you guys, is this a way to attract more people to the program, or is it a way to retain people? And if it's a way to attract people, how do you expect to get the message out?
So it's actually going to be both. The people who we risk losing are actually our long-term students, because as they get more and more advanced in ceramics, they are looking for more options. And as they start to hear about stuff, you know, now that they know stuff about clay, and if they go to shows or other studios and see like, gosh, well, I love their glazes and their clay, and they're all using gas kilns, guess what? They may go look at taking classes somewhere else. And then in terms of getting new students, I have a handful of former students who are at other studios that the only reason they're not coming here is because we don't have a gas kiln. Downstairs right now, you guys are all welcome, by the way, to stop by the ceramic studio. I have a class going on that is all my adult students in Highland Park. I don't teach an adult class there anymore. I did for about 10 years. And when I stopped teaching my adult class there and came here, all my students came with me. And I told them I have to go up to a meeting that's about the gas kiln. One of my students.
By the way, next time, bring
they're all down there, and they all asked if they could go. I told them not to because I didn't want to possibly have like six or seven more people up here right now. But they would love to talk to you guys. And anyway, one of my longtime students, she's been my student for about 8 years. There's a new student in there who said, oh, I haven't heard of a gas kiln, you know, what would be the difference? And I was explaining all the differences. And the student chimed in and she said, you know, the only, I like everything better at the Glencoe Park District except the gas kiln, except the kilns. So, and she was formerly at a studio in Arlington Heights with me, and then also at the Highland Park Park or Highland Park Art Center where they have a gas kiln. So I thought that was interesting considering she's been doing this for 8 years. She's followed me to multiple studios and her she loves this place, but the only thing she misses is gas kiln. And I think any of my adults that have used it before are going to say the same thing.
The challenge that comes up is our occupancy rates for the CAP classes are like 50 to 60% in the adults. If you lose a couple of people, suddenly you start not running classes, mm-hmm. and then you get down to the 30s and 40s, and then people go, oh, there's not enough people. You really lose the potential of the program if you don't keep investing in it. That's one thing that really could happen.
And we're not, no one has even addressed the teen market. Teen market wants that kind of higher level. So the two demographics that we're trying to attract to our building, right, that we underserve, and this is our main serving, is the teen and adults. And so this is, fits that need. That's what we're known for those two populations. So.
Yeah. I like the idea. I sort of just... I wish I had like numbers behind it and being like, hey, like, we'll get 10% more people, and we think it's that the cost is going to cover itself.
If you look at
if you said that, I'd be like, oh, well, this is a slam dunk.
It may,
right?
It might.
We just want to promise something that's not true.
If you look at our
advertising over how many years?
So you guys saw Bobby's mom about the growth of the program, right? Basically, this is what I've been able to do for you guys so far. I can't do much more unless you give me more space so I can have more kids classes. Those are a lot of them are maxed out with waitlist. Or you give me, you know, a standard piece of equipment. This is not, like Peggy said, we're not asking for the moon. This isn't something like super fancy that nobody else has. This is a standard piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to continue to bring in more students and sell your program any harder without having like this basic thing. It's also a one-time investment. This is not something that you would replace. Mm-hmm. I talked to Bobby about like, you know, the lifespan of this thing. Most studios, once you buy one, that's it. It's because it's basically a big shell of kiln. I have a picture if anybody wants to see. You would just replace parts on it. So, and I talked about those. The parts are minimal. The biggest expense is a computer processor, which is about $5,000. That you're looking at replacing maybe every 10 years, if that. I've only been at Highland Park for 11, and we just replaced ours last year, and I believe that computer processor came with the kiln, which is even was there before I was there. So it could be, you know, 15 years old, 20 years old. Any other smaller parts that would break, say, every 5 years are going to be maybe $1,000 to replace. So it's really minimal. It's this initial cost that's the big thing. And the ventilation, I think, is what adds to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good thing. You spread that cost over 40 years. It's not that much.
But that's what you should put on the spreadsheet.
It's $4,400 amortized over 20 years.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that
so if you would appreciate it, like a private business would, that would be your
if you did, but that's not how they do. Yeah.
So this is obviously a piece of equipment that you can't rent.
No,
no. Exactly.
The challenge is getting it in the building.
No, the major expense of this is actually the venting of it. The actual piece of equipment is about 30, and the rest is the venting and cooking up. And
they make different kinds. The one that we ended up landing on is one that can be taken apart into multiple pieces and then reassembled in our kiln room, because the kiln itself is going to be too large to fit through a doorway, and we needed this size because you don't want to get something puny and then be like, guys, we got your gas kiln, but guess what? You can only make pieces that are 10 inches tall because we got one that fit through the doorway. You need a larger one so people can make stuff that's at least maybe 2 feet tall, you know. Anyway, so in order to us like avoid us having to knock down walls, take out doorways, things like that, I found one that is made by like a solid company. They're reputable, that they can design it so that it comes apart into like three sections and will fit through all of our doorways.
Yes. We can fit this in the space where the other kilns are.
Yes.
Our architects have confirmed that.
That will work. The other thing, is there a propane option on this at all?
I don't know that it would be real efficient. Every single one that I've ever seen, and I've been doing this for like a long time, we've been doing ceramics for like 30 years or something, they always run off of a natural gas line. We have the hookup in there. That's actually not one of the challenges.
We have the capacity in the existing building. So when they renovated the Tekev Center in 2008, there was a thought for this. There is a stub in the room. So there's some work that's already been done for us. The existing gas main for the building will supply this. It's not like we need to dig up the street. So we covered all that stuff. That was, you know, one of the reasons we brought White in, was to really understand everything that we need to know.
Does that mean you've considered the cooling impact on the...
Yes. So the challenge, and Natalie spoke to it, is the kiln has to have powered exhaust that has to exhaust above the roof line. So it actually has to come up. This it's very difficult to retrofit these pieces of equipment. They're usually put in, you know, when they actually do the building. So the stack actually has to come up and exhaust above the roof line here at Tekev. So that's the challenge. I mean, there is going to be some heat. I mean, there's already heat from the electric kilns, but I mean, Natalie can speak to that. It doesn't make the room, you know, it's nice and toasty, but it's not uncomfortable to be in that space.
No, and I control when I fire the kiln. So if we notice that geez, it's getting a little hot, I can choose to fire it at a time that's going to be more appropriate, you know, whatever you guys decide.
So the bid does, the estimate from the White Architect includes alterations to the fire suppression system. They've really gone through, you know, that's kind of where we landed on that number that seemed a little, you know, almost double the cost of the equipment, is because there is a lot of things that have to be upgraded based on having this piece of equipment in there. So,
any other questions about that item?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. If you guys want to come, you can come down.
Send them down.
I'll be here long.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
All right. So we are going on to replace the RTU 1 and 2 at Tekev Center. We put a memo in there also. Do you have any questions on that? It's kind of, okay, that's kind of no-brainer. Place a Chevy pickup truck. I guess apparently you can see your feet, or you can see the ground when you're driving, like the Flintstones, so there's no...
Seats.
Yep, there's no more pushing that one back.
Super sale site, right now is what...
We actually have the garage, you know, it needs to be fixed, and we'll spend $3,000 to $5,000 to fix it, and then it's going to break down. Yeah. You know, so yeah, this is a good investment. Yeah.
You sell those?
This
one.
What we've done in the past is we've gotten a trade-in cost from the dealer on a piece of equipment, and then we've either traded them into the dealer or we've gone out for a sealed bid, and the minimum bid is set at the trade-in price, so we know we always at least get the trade-in.
Okay, perfect.
You always go to the same provider,
no.
The vendor, don't you?
So typically, fleet trucks are purchased through the co-op through the state of Illinois. So the state legally bids them out, and whichever vendor is selected, typically they're like about 25 or 30% below list price is what they land on. So they change, but it's been usually the same two or three vendors for the last 15 years.
All right, replace our 2003 beach cart because of condition. It's a pretty standard one. Any questions on that one? Take it parking lot, seal coat, and crack fill. Okay.
On the new one?
Front lot.
No, the front lot.
The back lot. They have to be seal coated the year after construction.
There we go.
Yeah. So we're 2 years due on the one set and due on the one from last year.
And no, then that was not included. Every other year after that? Just
it depends on the weather. It depends on your salt usage. It can be anywhere from 2 years to 5 years. I mean,
it gets a lot of salt.
It gets a lot of salt, and it depends on if you are really good in the beginning with keeping it up, then you can kind of stretch it out. It's when you've gone 3 or 4 years that you start to pay the price.
Okay.
So it's better to be proactive,
proactive than to have to cut sections of the lot off.
Retaining wall at Glencoe Beach. Any questions on that? Yes.
Is there any way we can get the village to help out with that?
I am in discussions with them, and I will keep you posted. It's still early in our negotiations. We are asking for them to pay for 50% of it. In the past, but if you look at the diagram, this is the part of the street that goes up to Park Avenue. Park Avenue, so it's like, I don't have the little thing. So it's going up here. They don't use this street at all. They just come down here. So my talks with them are, if this caves in, this will cave in, so you should still pay 50%. So I'll keep you posted. We put in the worst case scenario there, and I have asked, and it is going on to the trustees, so if you would like to talk to any of the trustees, you are more than welcome to on this project. Okay, well, you know, he can bring it up to them.
I'll tell you a story that might help in your negotiations.
Okay.
I was at the beach this morning, and the roofers were working on the halfway house. By the way, what an awesome job to have on a sunny morning.
Right? No kidding, right?
Some truck needed from the village needed to get down to the beach, but the roofers were parked right in front of the halfway house. So if they had not been able to drive up, they drove up the hill towards park. But if that had not been available to them,
you're right. That's the only way that happens.
Did you videotape it?
Right.
And that happens all the time. I will use that as
that's
argument.
A real,
that
I
is
love
a
that
is a great way.
Because that's
so,
not then
they
just
have to reverse all the way up there.
It's an emergency access, and they really need it because the water pipe. Well done.
We did talk about developing also a long-term agreement. What we're going to do, so we don't have to go back every time, because they actually need it to get down there for more months of the year than we do. So, so like I said, it's early in the process. They're going through their budget process. Mm-hmm. Phil was bringing it back to their trustees also, like I have to bring to you. He's doing the same thing. So I'll keep you posted on that. So I'm asking to split the cost like we have done in the past. Next one is West Tennis Color Court Color Coat. Something we do in our annual maintenance. We switch off the courts, correct, Chris?
That's correct.
Oh. And then the domestic hot water heaters that take up. These are some really fun stuff, but they need to be done. So, any questions on that?
What kind of hot water heaters do we have?
We have gas, so they provide hot water heat for all the classrooms, bathrooms, and the showers in the fitness center.
They're not the instantaneous kind?
No, they're not tankless water heaters. I don't think we could probably keep up with the need in this facility with a unit like that. We'd have to have them throughout the building.
And they're more expensive.
On the retrofit, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we have tanks. We've done some work in the system already, but.
All right, and then we have the.
Can I just ask a question?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
I know it's our property, but does the school district ever contribute to the tennis court maintenance, or we don't ask?
No, we do not. Yeah, that's ours. Yeah.
There will be energy stuff.
Okay.
Yes, of course.
What you think?
It's big enough to see on her phone.
And the other items in admin and marketing is continuous replacement of network workstation laptops, printers. Carol can speak on this.
It's a contingency only. I mean, a lot of stuff will be replaced this current fiscal year, but I always, just in case. If we don't spend it, we don't spend it, and it becomes part of the rollover for the following year.
I thought I remembered that we just budgeted for, okay,
yes.
But you're right, stuff happens. And
Replacing printers is right up there with RTUs as the least fun thing.
I totally agree with you. And the final thing is a technology master plan. When we were going through our whole, and Aaron and Carol can speak to this too, when we're going through our whole really looking, we brought in a consultant to really look at our website. We did a lot of focus groups with users and really learned a lot about our system. And we discovered that, boy, when we redo this website, we have to make sure that whatever we're going to do 3, 4, 5 years down the line as far as our recreation software is compatible to that. And then we started talking about all the other technology things that we need to really look at, like, because that's one of our strategic plan goals, like an automated maintenance work system. What are some of the other ones?
Security cameras.
Document management.
Document management, things like that. That we just don't have the wherewithal to do that. And we really want to look at it instead of just saying, okay, we're going to do this, and then 3 or 4 years down the line, we have to change. We're upgrading our registration or change or whatever, and then we have to redo the website.
Yeah. So the other thing is the website and the sales software really go hand in hand for the customer, so customers see it all as one piece.
Right.
And we am I allowed to ask a question?
You sure are. Go ahead.
We operationalize and maintain that ourselves, or do we have a third party that does all this?
The website? Or
yeah,
the
website, and the we buy the software for the right. operational side, for the...
Correct. Recreational and financial
yeah.
software.
We buy
the software,
we
it's on-premise.
It. Yeah.
So it's licensed and it's maintained through a maintenance agreement, small, but we still pay a maintenance agreement for ongoing support.
Is it the best practice? Like, are there enterprises out there that will do more for us, that will keep up with the technology, that will host it in the cloud, that will do all that stuff?
You gotta remember, we have a lot of transparency, things that aren't really within the recreation scope.
Right.
Like, board stuff that we need to be posting. So, no, I don't.
You can still post to it, right? I mean,
I can post to it. I think there's like a lot of document management okay. systems that we could be building into that recreation software.
Most of them are just because in 3 years,
I know
the technology changes, right?
Well, and that's why we want
websites.
Yes.
You go to, you know, you want something on the web. It can go to your phone. You want.
We want all that.
Right.
Everything's
going to
change.
There's got to be.
And that's why we want to do this master plan, because we think there is a lot out there, and that we have to. First of all, it's going to be a challenge, I'm going to be honest with you, to find the right person to do this technology. So that is, we have our work cut out for us just to find someone that can do this. So if anybody has anybody out there that does that. But we think that everything you said, we really have to look at it in a more innovative way than we have in the past, to try to be a leader in the industry as opposed to like trying to catch up. And so that's why we decided we really need to look at this technology, you know, this master plan. Mm-hmm. For everything, all the way from how can we do training better for our staff? Is there some way to put that onboarding online so that we're spending all this time and we bring all these camp counselors in and they're sitting every year through the same packet? Is there some way we can do a training module where they go through, answer questions, and they do it before they even walk in the door? So when they come for training, we're training them on how to do behavior, how to do that, not the policies that we have to do every year.
Yeah, I mean, I do those 3 times, 4 times a year. I have to do those.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we want.
There's a bunch of companies out there that do this.
Yeah.
And we hire one. It's actually, I think, local.
Yeah.
That does all the training and click here. Click
right.
Here.
And so that's what we want to get to that point. So that's why we decided we really need this technology master plan to kind of look at everything we're doing. You know, we've learned a lot through our consultant, Bobby Nance, and we're like, yeah, wow, we can be doing
there's also some
more
and better fruit for the website now that we can be implementing currently.
Yeah.
So that was a good part of the study.
Right.
Yes.
I like the idea of a master plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Just to add to that, I was at a conference recently and they were talking about this new program of continuous auditing, where it does the auditing on a continuing basis and there are parameters set for any thing that you purchase or any supplier, and it you know, checks that off right as you go through. And then you get a record at any time of any transaction.
Interesting. Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, there's so much. There's even more in the registration software world that there wasn't even there 6 months ago that are coming online there. And probably within 3 or 4 years, we'll really see what they can do. So it, to make it more user-friendly, like we're talking like the Amazon shopping cart where it's easier, there's finally the recreation software starting to catch up to that movement. So that'll be exciting to see what's going to happen even in a year or so.
It is, because it's not like the most user-friendly.
Oh, it's not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's
terrible. We know that.
It just looks bad for no reason.
And you always forget you have to go to, like, you don't realize that you have to go to the...
Yeah.
Yes, right.
Like
that. Oh, that's...
But you also have to remember there's that balance, and I'm going to say this because, you know, I've got Carol in my ear all the time going, hey, watch this, which is good. I need that. When you get those easy conveniences, it also comes with a heavy price tag. So we also have to balance that out. Also, you know, if it's going to cost us, I'm just going to throw out, you know, $50 transaction, is it worth, you know?
Right,
so
right.
Well, that's what this technology master plan will help
and
us
we're
with.
A small district, so, you know, a larger district can justify
can they can
that
absorb
kind of
that?
Amazon level process.
So we have to
and
be realistic.
As a small town, have to look at things a little differently.
Yeah.
But we need a master plan.
So smart is that a lot of you that plan.
Yes.
Which is that we're planning for everything else. So, you know, that's what we say in the room. We're like, we plan for everything else, but technology, we're kind of just like, let's do this now. So we want to.
We actually did a technology plan, right? It was like 2012.
Right when I started,
was this
right?
5 years,
yeah.
Which then we came to the end, and it's like, okay, now it's you always have to. It changes so.
It changes so quick. You're right. We did do it when we did the new rec track and the encode and everything like that. So it's time.
Yep, you should go back and read that.
We go look at old strategic plans. It's funny. Any other any questions on Fund 65?
Okay, all right. Let's go move on to discussion of Fund 69, the 3-year capital project plan.
Okay, there's really not a lot. I just wanted to put this on here off the board because, as you know, the board sent us out to do a facility master plan for Watts and a facility master plan for the maintenance area. So I just wanted to tell you that it is out there. We're doing that. We have a community meeting for Watts scheduled tomorrow. So that was kind of, moved up our timeline because the park grant application is tentatively scheduled for December 2nd through January 7th, and we have to have the community meeting portion of that done for the park grant if the board chooses to do that. So we'll have that tomorrow to give the architects some ideas, additional ideas on what to do. You know, there's basic questions like, do you like the look of Watts? Do you want anything to change as far as the exterior? Do you want anything to change in the ice rink? We did a survey, which was, we'll share those results later, but what I can tell you is this community loves Watts.
A lot of passion.
A lot of passion for the ice rink and the building. So that was really, it kind of validated what we all thought. So this is a facility that's very near and dear. So that was really nice to see. So we have that meeting tomorrow night. And then we'll bring those results back and the board can decide if they want to go for the park grant. What I always say is if you're going to go for the park grant and we get it, we have to do it. So yeah. I always tell you, take it very seriously whether we want to do this park grant. It's a 75-25 match, so they pay 75, we pay 25, and it's $2.5 million. And ice rinks have been successful. Community centers have been successful in the past for park grants, but it'll be very, very competitive from what I understand. So don't get your hopes up too much, but I think it's worth a try as we go. So we really don't have a lot to talk about on this one, but just know that next year's is already set, so we have plenty of time, and we'll hopefully bring back at the December meeting some of the information from the focus group and the surveys.
So for this year, any of the donations or grants, that money is not represented, right?
Yeah, we don't put that on there until we get it.
Okay.
Because, you know, the state of Illinois, you know, they just gave money from 2000, what was that?
14.
They just announced 2014. So we're like, what? They announced the grants? And we get something from IAPD. These are from 2014. We're like, so that's why we never count the chickens before they're hatched, because we want to make sure that money's in the bank. So there is things out there. There's the IDNR grant we got for $200,000. There's the
CMAP,
thank you. I was about to say ITEP. A CMAP grant for $667.
Yeah. Donor.
And then the donor for $300. So, and that comes in $100,000 per year. So once we get those funds, and then we also have the Linden House. So I'll be going, we have a court date set for the Linden House in November. So I'll go down and represent the Park District at that. And then we can move ahead to put that house off the market. But we don't really want to put those funds in there. But know they're there for future.
Well, it just helps when you see the numbers to know that there's money towards this. Because, I mean, we knew it was getting low, the fund balance, and so.
But you don't know if they're there until we get the money.
Right.
You know, there's been many of park districts that got a park grant or got an IDNR grant, and then it wasn't released for 3 to 4 years. So that's
that,
why
that
we
happened to us in the Plains. I mean, we got an IDNR OSLAD grant for $400,000. Took us 3 years to get it.
Yeah. So that's it. I'd be very honest.
We revised the scope of the project at the time because it was a partnership between the city and the park district, and did the OSLAD components later on. But we had to revise the scope because we did not have the funds to do the project.
Yeah. So that's why we don't put those in there until we have them. I'm just being brutally honest because that's happened to too many districts. They kind of depended on that money, and then they couldn't do a project. So you have already approved this a trail without any grant, so it's going through. So any money that we're saving on here will be put, you know, the money comes in, will be put back into this fund.
Okay. And then is the train in here? Because I see the trail, the $275 for the playground, and the $180 for the water spray, but I don't see for other components.
That's a good question. Let me see.
No, because we're not reflecting the money from the donor either, which was going to be
yeah, useful. that's what's funding the train. Yeah. Yeah, that's the wash. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyone's out?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As a compromise to help us understand the numbers, but not allow us to go crazy with funds we don't have, we might think about putting those grant monies like a year, like in the next year or the year after.
Yeah, and so, I think part of it, too, is just we're in the middle. We just finished I got the first draft, so I haven't even seen what the first draft looks like. And, like, to meet with Chris once he knows more details on the grants of when will they likely fall, that I think I would feel more comfortable mm-hmm. at least putting them in there in a version of it, maybe not the official version.
But we'll have to enter into an intergovernmental agreement and agree to their terms before they will give us the final thumbs up. So typically, once you get that agreement, you will get the money someday. You don't, if there's a political issue, you could get that money held up, but typically when they do that agreement, you have the money eventually. Mm-hmm. But as to Lisa's point, it could be a week after you submit the paperwork, or you know, somebody could make a decision in Springfield that takes 2.5 years in an election cycle to get the money. Mm-hmm. So that can be the kind of challenge.
We could figure out some way to put it in there, but
I think for sure the other components, because we know where to do them.
Yeah, the components.
And we do have the donor money, that can be.
And we have a signed contract. We can put that in. Yeah.
And can we put the money from them? Because you probably have a date.
We can put the money from the donor in there. Yeah. We could do that because we have a signed contract with them.
Okay.
So we could easily put that one in and then put the train expense in there.
But just to make sure I'm understanding this, I think the vote went in before I was on the board. We voted on it. It's going through. Even if the state of Illinois pulls the money for whatever reason, which we don't anticipate, this could be a longer time, we're still doing this. We're doing this because it was voted on by all of us.
Yep, prior to knowing if there would be
the board allowed to approve the construction contract.
Yeah, the board, but you approved the project. Right. The board allowed to approve the construction contract, but they approved the expenditure without any grant promise, so. Correct. All right. Any other questions?
Any other questions on any of this? All right.
Other business?
Maybe a quick follow-up.
Sure.
It's still, and I guess it's not knowable yet, how much money we're actually going to have available for our capital projects at this point. Is that correct?
Carol?
Well, next year is already set, and we have the money. It's for the projects for 21-22. So if you look at that, if you're looking at this, yellow is... Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Because we haven't decided those.
And that's also assuming a $300,000 and $500,000 transfer from corporate and rec, which, again, until I at least see a first draft of the budget, you know, is always a question mark.
And then there's the possibility of... bonds, right?
That's another discussion that I think once the maintenance facility and the Watts facility and the input, we really need to have more discussion about, because I know we were kind of looking at, okay, early February when we have our budget workshop was when we really wanted to start honing in, because it's a 3-month process, rates are still low.
Yeah.
Allowing us the ability to then look forward and not necessarily see the red down the road. Because that's money that we'll have at low interest rates, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, that's really good thing.
When I looked at what the bonds were that we issued in 2001 with the original Watts issue, mm-hmm. was 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah. So we're between 2 and 2.5 right now per Eric's last documentation.
All right. Any other questions? Okay, other business. Right after this meeting, Chris and I are getting in the car and driving down to Springfield for Brad.
Wow.
No, our presentation's at 10.
Oh.
I got a little nervous, like, what if something happens? What if there's an accident? What if there's car breaks down?
Yeah.
And if you miss it, you lose out on that chance to get that $400,000.
Oh.
So we're leaving tonight. We have our presentation at 10 o'clock.
It.
3 minutes, and then we're headed back home.
Oh, so you've been practicing in 3 minutes. Yes. Now you know what it's like.
Yes, yes, exactly. So that's what I do. I want to update you on the Frank Lloyd Wright Cottage. So, so far, the Historical Society is working on some, I guess, contract conflicts with the owner and some issues with the village. And
it's
but
now
they,
owner also problems. I didn't know that. Okay.
It was
okay,
just some contract things.
Right.
I don't know what that's
okay.
dealing with. I just
right.
out of that. But they so when I heard they're having issues with the contract between the Historical Society's lawyer and them, I'm like, huh. I didn't want this board to get a black eye by putting out a community meeting and then the Historical Society not agreeing to this very reasonable terms that the board sent, such as making sure there's a clause in there, they don't upkeep it, to make sure that they show that they have enough funds. So I spoke to Lisa, so we have started it. They feel comfortable with starting that process. I contacted our attorneys this morning to work on the lease agreement. As soon as I have that, I'm going to send it to you by first to make sure you're okay with it, and then I will send it on to them if you are okay with whatever. Is in that contract, and then I'll probably ask Lisa to sign one or two. That's what we did last time to have discussions with their representatives before we move forward. The last thing I want to do is that they can't agree to that terms, and then we could look like we have black eye because we didn't make it happen for them. So it kind of gives us a little more power than having a community meeting and them controlling the narrative. So I was a little nervous about that when I heard that there are some contract issues that weren't really that big of one, so I was just a little nervous about that. So working on that, so keep your fingers crossed. They're still very eager to have it done by that December deadline. So
the hopeful timing is what? Like?
What? I think they still want to move it before the end of the year.
So that would require us to do what?
So as soon as we get the contract done, I would recommend having a committee meeting. It could be a committee meeting, it could be a public meeting, it could be together, that you announce it to the public, and then they come and give you feedback on whether they think that's a good use for that property.
So we would have to set that meeting
mm-hmm.
sometime between now and the end of the month.
Yes, I'm hoping, no, or before December. So I'm hoping by, hopefully, that we'll either be able to do that either by the board meeting, which I don't know, the November board meeting, have a meeting before or after that portion, or the December committee meeting.
I'm still confused. And I talked to
you,
Lisa, and this last month.
Yeah.
It seemed like the last discussion that we had, and just maybe three bullet points on what changed, that you know, being a real estate business or a home that no one else seems to have a location for is part of our mission. Can you explain to me what the thinking is behind why we would take this on and take this risk?
Well, it's not our, we're not taking on any maintenance of it, any of the moving costs. We are actually just leasing them the land that the house sits on.
Right, but
so,
the perception is going to be it's ours. In the court of public opinion, when the GHS has no money and it's on our land, the perception is it's going to be ours, right?
Well, there'll be something, a clause in the contract that gives the board in the future the ability to give it away to another organization, tear it down, you know, whatever. So at the meeting, I brought it to the board to say, is this something we want to venture in? A lot of park districts do have historic houses sitting on their property. Oh, Park is a prime example. They have two major houses that were
Oak Park.
Yes, total operation. Yeah, they put the houses on there, or they bought the houses at that
with
the land on there.
They
might have used
it.
Yeah, yeah.
We had the exact same scenario.
Pardon me?
We had the exact same scenario to this in the states where the park district owned the property and the history center owned what was historic in Des Plaines, and they had they operated the facility as their own facility, and the park district just maintained the tax exempt status of the land in that particular agreement.
I think Winnetka has that cabin. I think that's on park
district
land.
That's a forest reserve.
Little House?
It is? Yeah.
No, not Little House where we are.
No,
that little.
I know
what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah,
right
yeah.
on Tower
yeah.
Road.
So
I think
yeah,
park
some park districts do have. Buffalo Grove has a museum.
Yes, they do.
In an old house. Mm-hmm. So yes, there. That is so. It is in the mission of the park district. The biggest difference is that we would not take ownership of that house. We would not maintain it. They know that we have ownership.
The biggest difference is, in my opinion, and I could be wrong here, is that it's not it's sort of the architect of the house and not the house itself that people cling to here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's not like, oh, it's an old house and we really want to have it, we want to have it for a historical site. If the Historical Society wanted to rent land from us and build something that was, you know, not Frank Lloyd Wright, I think that's a little bit different. But because it's a Frank Lloyd Wright, your hands are really tied here a little bit.
Yeah, it's really like a good PR story and a really bad PR story.
It's
a good PR story as long as it goes well, but
right,
if we maintain
right.
it and then we're like, oh, well, we're going to tear it down, then we're
is the contract
totally
require them to have... you know, what happens if the GHS goes bankrupt, anything like that, like, who's...
Right, so then it reverts back to the park district, and the park district would decide what
right.
to do with that.
And, we're
in the
business of figuring out what
else, please.
Thousands of Glencoe residents in the village can't seem to do.
Well, there are other places for this to go. So, in other words, if it came to that, we wouldn't be here, I would imagine,
yeah.
but let's say our you know,
yeah,
successors, if it came to that, there are other entities that would say we'll take it.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're going to burn it and everyone's going to scream at us.
There's a private residence in Barrington that wants to take
that
it right
would take
now.
It. There's a National Frank Lloyd Wright Society that gets involved in these
yeah.
exact sort of issues.
Dudley, you want to speak to it?
Yeah,
you're passionate about this.
I've done a little bit of research on it, and it is sort of the prototype for suburban ranch housing in the entire United States. I mean, it is, from an architectural standpoint,
yeah.
a very significant building, even though when you look at it, it's just a simple box.
Mm-hmm.
But that got translated into suburbia.
it's a cool building. I think you're right. I think if everything works out perfectly, it's almost like a no-brainer. The problem is that we don't live in...
Nothing's perfect.
Nothing's
mm-hmm.
perfect.
Yep, that's a risk you take.
Of putting onto the future board oh my gosh, no one's maintaining this house, it's on our property, it's falling apart, and we're going to take, you know, X dollars away from the beach, or from Watts, or from buying sailboats to maintain a house that someone else promised they were going to maintain. That's where
I
struggle.
That's true. That's
absolutely
what, risk. That's exactly right. That's what we're faced with. Nobody can predict the future, and we just have to determine, is this a risk we're willing to take?
Okay.
So if the board's changed their mind on this, it would be better to tell them sooner rather than later, because I had the directive,
yeah.
I had the directive last time that to advance this. So
yeah.
is it changing?
Voted for it anyway, then,
there you go.
You know, it
yes.
doesn't make a difference my thoughts, but to me it seems very risky. And it seems to me like having to make this decision with 7 weeks notice, with seven more weeks in the year, effectively by the end of the year, right?
But what information would help you that time would allow you to make a different decision? I'm just curious.
I think I'd like to understand the funding, the what-if scenarios, the funding behind it. I know GHS has been around for a long time. I know they maintain a house by the coffee shop. I don't know what else they do. I don't know where their funds come from. I don't know what the insurance looks like. I don't know if, all that stuff. I just don't know. But I realized I was also not here last month.
So the direction that we gave Lisa was not do this in any event. The direction we gave Lisa was start to negotiate a lease that we can look at and make sure that we're satisfied with it, if I recall
correct. That is exactly
mm-hmm.
right.
You've got a pretty tight deadline to go through that and get all of us together for Thanksgiving, holidays. Mm-hmm. If you could really have to do that 7 weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have that's done a, this before, though,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Yes.
With the
this
with
is
the
not
house
our first rodeo.
Well, where did you do it before? It's really because they brought to us they were going to do the weighing station, so that one we didn't move forward with because they didn't really have a plan in mind. If this issue feel any better, so the sculpture that's on Inner Green Bay, that was not ours, it's an artist. We had an issue, it had to be maintained. When push came to shove, the people who really had passion behind it came up with the money to maintain it. These people are beyond passionate for this. And I do believe that they will, it's their pride and they will maintain it, but that's why we built in those safeguards, that if they don't maintain it, we can take it over and do something.
And I knew a part of the discussion with the village is the Historical Society was concerned about long-term, like yearly maintenance on it. They approached the village to see if they would do any funding. So that's the part of the negotiations with the village. Like, if you're passionate about keeping this, and the purchase for putting up the land, would you be willing to put up some money for the yearly maintenance? And I know that the village is going back to Phil's going back to the village trustees to ask them that question. So
yeah, and I know the criteria that you know in your business life, in your business mind. It's a cultural identity in a very small town, and so you have to sort of like scale back those kinds of expectations.
I hear you, and I agree. And I know I have a very economic way of thinking on this.
Yes.
But you know, we sign contracts all the time with companies that go belly up, and we are the ones that we assume that risk.
Yeah.
And when I think about
With much more information.
But when I think about, you know, when I look at the numbers that we have, we're not flush with cash. We're trying to figure out, can we buy a kiln? Right? Do we want to spend 90 grand on a kiln, which sounds awesome.
But this isn't a big financial outlay, and I totally understand and agree with you. But it would be the financial outlay. What's the worst that could happen? You have to look at worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that we take some staff time to find somebody else who wants to take the building. Mm-hmm. And then we, I don't know, fill in the basement.
I'm going to say it slightly differently. Yeah. I think I totally agree with you, but it's such a small building.
And it's such a small
building. I'd be like,
okay,
so the worst case scenario is we have to buy a roof for 1,000 square feet.
If we just choose to somehow absorb
and
it into
it.
Our
right.
assets.
Right.
Yeah, right.
It's not a huge building, right. It's not the full house that sits on the property now. It's only the original section. And I think I got emails like...
It is really small. Yeah.
Today, how much was the... If I haven't just got it's so
has
small.
The village offered any property for it?
They don't have any property for it.
They don't have any property at the village?
No, not really. Not for that. Not for that at all. No. So it's about.
Oh, next to the Carmel.
So the footprint is.
Right.
The footprint is 61 feet by 25 feet. So it's not a big footprint. It's a very small footprint. And then maybe some price at. Think about landscaping, so maybe a little bigger than that, so it's not a big footprint.
But we also have the hurdle of the neighborhood. You know, you have to have a community meeting. And
right,
to,
they
you know,
hate
so
it.
there's hurdles.
Mm-hmm. And they know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that even if we go through, you guys all like the lease, if the neighbors don't like the idea, that it's dead there too.
I think,
so.
I think my what if is not just financial, but it is, and I'll get off my soapbox here in a second. It's also the emotional aspect. It's if no one wants to support it, and if we have to maintain this house, and if we don't want to do that, for whatever reason, it's not as easy as, oh, well, the Historical Society will put it in the Frank Lloyd Wright area and wherever. Because then you have all these emotional, you're going to have the same thing that you have now, which is...
Oh, without a doubt.
Then the community at that time will have to weigh in.
Yeah.
And we don't,
so let's see what the community says, right? I mean, I think it's good to negotiate it. I, for one, happen to be a little on the skeptical side here, but it'd be interesting to see what they come back with and what our worst case scenarios are.
Mm-hmm. They still have a lot of hurdles.
That's why they're going on the basis of the fact that they did the whole waiting room thing and talked about the waiting room thing and then they're not able to pull it off.
And they weren't able to meet the restrictions. I was very clear. I'm like, if you can't meet these, don't even waste our time or your time because these are pretty easy things and, you know, they're a little... Communication's a little tough, so.
I don't understand why they just don't raise the money to buy the land the house is on.
That's already sold. That ship sailed a long time ago.
Like, the developer would sell it back, right?
No.
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 And I think that was outside
and then
the scope
they would,
of their
And then they would have to, yeah. then they would have to maintain the land and, you know, so.
Right. Then they have to do exactly what they want us to do.
Yeah, they don't have
the funds to buy the land.
That's outside of
that. We have a lot of Okay. I don't think that's it for me.
Oh, on the road again.
Okay.
You want to get out.
Motion to adjourn?
So motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I need a second?
Second.
All right. Second
Okay, point. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, motion passes.
All right. 8:05. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Safe travels.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Late night jaunt to Springfield. I know. It's not so bad.